Okay, in the last part of today's lecture, we're going to look at disk scheduling. So here the idea is, how can the operating system help with scheduling the different disk reads that are coming to the disk in a particular way so that we can reduce the seek time and the rotation time. So we're going to look at some simulations for this. So I'll just explain the setup here. This is the disk head. So currently the disk head is at sector 6. Okay? The disk head is currently at sector 6. And these are the queue of requests for different sectors that the disk has. So some different applications are trying to read different things. And the three requests that are currently queued for reading are 10, 30, and 14. Okay, and this disk has a total of 36 sectors from 0 till 35. We have three tracks here, and this is the spindle, this is the disk arm, and the disk head is here. Okay, and if you just start this, so first it's reading 10, then it's reading 30. And then it's doing a seek, and rotations are happening for reading 14. Okay? So the things to note again here in this case, the three blocks that are read are 10, 30, and 14. Initially, there was no seek, and there was a rotate of like 105. And then for each and every transfer, we take like constant time of 30, and the total time for this particular block is like 0, 105, and 30. You can think that we are reading in terms of blocks rather than sectors, because usually the operating system reads in terms of blocks. Okay, so block is just a group of sectors, as we just saw. In a block in our case was 4 KB, and so a block is just 8 sectors together. So you may assume these are blocks. Okay, and for the second block, again, we have similar parameters here for the time it took for seek, the rotate, and the transfer, and the total time that it took for reading this block. And this is the total seek time that for these three blocks together, the total rotate time, the total transfer time, and the total time of the seek, rotate, and transfer is written here. Okay. Now we are going to see what happens in a sequential workload. So here again, we are going to read. The three reads are happening to the blocks 9, 10, and 11. Okay, 9, 10, and 11. We start this. Read 9, then 10, then 11. So the one thing that we can notice here is, like, initially there was like a rotate for coming below the particular block 9. But after that, there was like no rotate or neither seek, because all the three blocks 9, 10, and 11 were in the outermost track. And so this reduces the total time, because there is no seek time at all. There is a rotate time just for the initial rotation, but after, for the next two blocks, there are no rotations. And the one thing to observe is, like, the transfer time remains the same. Even in the random workload that we just saw, the transfer time was 90 in total, and even here the transfer time is 90. Okay, but the total time has reduced from 615 to 165 for reading three blocks sequentially compared to reading three blocks in a random way. So the next thing we are going to read is 10, 11, 12, and 13. So This is a sequential read. It's going to read 10 blocks, 10, 11, 12, and 13. But do you have any guess of like what may happen when we are going to read this? So like, let's assume we go to 10, then 11. Then the important thing to notice is 12 is in a different thing, right? So we start this from 0, 1, 2, 3 up to 11, and the next thing immediately starts here, 12 till 23, and then 24 starts here right below. So 0, then 12, 24 is right here, okay? So when we are reading 10 and 11, so we may read 10, 11, and we may or we may not be able to read 12 directly based on how fast the seek is and how fast the rotation is also. Right? So in this case, let's just see. We see that just because we missed that 12, because we seek the seek was not so fast, we had to like wait for a whole rotation. I will just run it one more time. If you have missed it, so we are reading 10 first, then 11, and then just before we got to 12, 12 just passed the disk head. And so we have to wait for one complete rotation for reading 12, and then 13 is on the same track, so it's fine. So this seek was necessary, but can we reduce this rotate from 320 to like nearly zero? Is it possible? How? Exactly. So if the positions of these, if we don't start, let's say 12 directly below zero, but just introduce a skew there, and then we can be sure that based on the time of the seek and the rotation, before we go to 12, we will not miss 12 basically before it comes there. So here we may notice that 0 to 11 is here and 12 is not directly below 0, but it is somewhere here. There is some skew that is introduced here. And so now if we run this, it's going to like read 10, 11, and before, we had like enough time to actually do a seek to read 12. And so you may notice that the rotate time reduced from initially here it was 320 for that whole rotation. It reduced from 320 to 220. So usually in the real world, disks usually have this skew just to make sure that the sequential read or sequential write is not penalized because of the seek and the rotate times. So we saw like the idea of zones. So now we are just going to see. So here in this disk, we can see that the outer, you may assume like each track is a zone here. So in this zone, we have like nearly 26, but this inner track has like less than 26. You can see it starts from 26 and goes till 43, and the innermost track has still less number of blocks, okay? So in this setup, again, if you want to like see what is happening, let's just do this. The blocks are, it's a sequential read. So if you just noticed here, the transfer time is like 14, because the rate at which we will be able to read from the outermost track will be less than the rate at which we'll be reading from the innermost track, because the number of blocks that are going to pass below the disk head is going to vary. So we can see here the same. So we'll just have this here, and then We'll have something like so here we are going to read the blocks 44 to 49, which are in the innermost track. And the idea here is for the same rotation, the rotation of the disk is always at the constant speed. So for that same disk rotation speed, for reading these blocks, the transfer time took like 30 blocks in the innermost track. But we just saw that in the outermost track, the bandwidth was even more higher because we can read a lot more data in the same amount of time. And so the bandwidth is higher in the outermost track than it is in the innermost tracks. Okay. Yeah. So in the things that we were calculating, it was just the average transfer time. Okay, now so we are assuming that we need to access these blocks that we have here, and the scheduler that we have is just like a first in, first out scheduler. Okay, it just accesses the blocks in the same order that it receives. So if you see here, it's going to access 7, then does a seek and rotation is happening, and then 27, and then it goes to 8, which is in the outermost track again, then it comes to 12, then it comes to 20. Okay, so this was what happened with this particular scheduler, which is a first-in, first-out scheduler. Could we have done better in this case? You can assume that we know all these requests beforehand. We have like this list of requests with us. So the one thing that we can think here is like the request 7 and 8, okay? They were just adjacent to each other. There is no necessity that all these blocks should be read like in the same order that they are being received by the disk. So the operating system can inform the disk to first read 7 and then 8 and then maybe go to like 12 or something like that. And it can, by doing so, it will actually reduce the seek and the rotation times that it needs. So for example, here, for almost everything we needed a seek, except the first thing, for almost everything we needed a seek and a rotation. So one different scheduling policy is the first thing that we're going to see is we have the seek, the rotation, right? So the first thing we're going to see is how can we reduce the seek time. So the scheduling policy that we're going to use for reducing the seek time is called the shortest seek time first. So in this shortest seek time first, the idea here is if you have like, let's assume these are 3 tracks. Start with this queue. So assume if you have like blocks like this on this particular disk, okay? And if the requests that are coming are 3, 5, 24, 4, 18. Let's assume just these five requests. So here what is going to happen is this particular shortest schedule, seek time first, make sure that it just orders these particular blocks that the disk is going to read in the way that it minimizes the seek time completely. So for example, what it's going to do is when, let's assume when it's starting at 3, when the disk head is at 3, it knows like from this list, if I'm going to read 3, the other things that I can read being on the same track are 5 and 4. Is that right? You can read 5 and 4, which are in the same track, which doesn't even need a seek. And so since there is no seek that is involved here, the order that it is going to read is like 3, 4, 5. And then it's going to see like from here, what is the next request that I can read, which needs like minimum seek or the shortest seek. So the two options are 18 and 24. And we can see here that 18 is in the like an inner track, one track inside this, in like the middle track, but 24 is in the innermost track. So obviously the next thing that it is going to read after reading 3, 4, and 5 is 18, because it needs like shorter seek when compared to 24. And finally, it's going to read 24. Okay, this is what is going to happen in a shortest seek time first scheduling policy. Like this is like the scheduling policy is related to disk scheduling. How can we schedule the requests that are going to the disks? Okay. Are there any issues that you may notice here, like in this particular setup? Yeah, so you can assume that we like have it like 3, 5, 4, but more than that, if there are like, okay, the scenario is if there are multiple requests that are coming in. Let's assume if there are multiple requests that are coming in to this scheduler, to this to the disk, then what may happen to, let's say, 8, the 18 and 24? If there are a lot more requests, and if all those requests, additional requests that are coming in, if every request is in the outermost track, then we are not even going to like service the request 18 and 24 for a very long time until there is no request in the outermost track. So assume there are currently some bunch of requests that we can apply this policy on, and that we just keep on adding new things to that particular bunch of requests. And in this case, easily the blocks in the inner tracks can easily starve if there are like a lot of requests that are coming to the outermost track. We'll see like how do we actually resolve that in a few moment. Let's look at a simulation of this. So this is using a shortest seek time first, and we are using the same request as we saw with the first in, first out policy. So here you can see 7, then 8. Did you see that? So I can just maybe run one more time and pause it in the middle. So first it reads 7, and even though 23, by in the order that it got, it's 23, but it is going to schedule, as you can see here, it's going to schedule 8. It's going to read 8 because it is in the same track, and then it sees if there is anything else in the same track, there is nothing else, and so the next thing that it can read is 23, which is in the innermost track, so which is in the middle track, so it just goes and reads 23, and then it finds 12 on the innermost track, it reads that, and the last two things, 27 and 28, are in the inner, like innermost track, and it finally reads that. Okay. So we saw like this has like a problem with starvation. Do you see like any other problems with this shortest seek time first? Pardon? Exactly. So it actually does not take into account the rotation. It only sees the seek time. It only keeps in mind the seek time. So in this case, let's assume if we read 8 first, okay? if 8 was read first, because the diskette was right there, but if the next thing that we are going to read was 7, okay, then we had to like wait for a complete rotation just because 7 was in the same track. Just because 7 doesn't need a seek, we had to wait for a complete rotation. So the shortest seek time first does not take into account the rotation of the disk. It only focuses on the seek time. Let's see an example for that. So we have a question now. So there are three requests here to block 7, 22, and 2. So which order do you think these three requests are going to be processed? 7, then 22, and 2. Any idea? 7, 2, 22. Yeah, so if it is just a shortest seek time first scheduler, it is going to use just 7, then 2, then 22. But let's assume now if it takes into account, if we take into account the rotational delay also, and we can decide like which one to, it's not just a shortest seek time first, we can just decide among 22 and 2, which one will take the least amount of time, irrespective of seek time or the rotation time, then let's see. So in this case, it can actually go and take 7, and then easily, because the disk is rotating this way, right, it can go to 22, seek to 22, and then go back to the outermost track. Before that, 2 would have got under the disk head, so we could have read that. But in this case, let's see what's happening. It's doing the same thing, 7, 2. Let's see why. So it just decided to do 7, 2, and 22 just because here we actually can't assume anything about the seek time and the rotation time. On this particular disk, the seek time was like much longer when compared to the rotation time. And so this disk scheduler decided to do this particular scheduling that it just did, okay? But again, this was just for fun, okay? Just to make sure that we can't really assume like which one may be less, like the rotation time or the seek time. We really can't assume that. But what we expected, so the policy that actually takes both the seek time and the rotation time into consideration, it's called the shortest access time first. Whichever block is takes the shortest time to access, it takes into consideration both the seek time and the rotation time, and so it's called the shortest access time first. And in this case, this was what we expected. Is that right? We just thought like it will go to 7, then 22, and then finally to 2. So one, let's just see this. So first let's just see like, we just saw like how can we tackle the problem due to starvation that we just saw, the rotation that we just saw. Just take into consideration the rotation time too along with the seek time and see like whichever block is the best to access the shortest possible time. So the next thing that we're going to see is like what is the problem of starvation? So initially, this disk has like 10 and 30, but when we start processing this, new requests start coming in. And since so it's just not going to 30 because it's computing that that particular thing, in this case, like 3 is like shortest to access when compared to 30, but because 30 is like farther away from wherever the current disk head is. Okay, maybe in this particular disk the seek time is longer. And so as we can see here, as we are getting like more and more requests on the same track or like nearby, this is going to starve. The request 30, the read to the block 30 is going to starve. And finally it goes here. Okay. So any ideas for like what can we do to avoid this particular starvation problem? There were like multiple solutions. So one important solution was called the scan algorithm. Okay. So in this scan algorithm, what happens is the disk head, if it is like starting from here, it reads the requests that are in this particular track, and then it immediately does this. If it, let's assume if it moves to the second, like let's assume these tracks are 1, 2, and 3. If it reads some requests from track 1, and then if it moves to, let's say, track 2, after that, the disk head will only move in one direction. If it is starting from the outermost track, it's only moved towards the innermost track. In that case, what we are saying is, when we, after we read this particular block, and after we read this particular block, if a new request comes here to the outer block, we will not process this in this particular scan, or you can assume this to be a sweep. So the disk head only sweeps from the outermost track to the innermost track, and in a single sweep, it just goes in a particular direction, processing all the requests that are there at that, like for example, yeah, here if there is a request in this particular track, then it, we are going to come here and do the sweep. So the tracks are going to be accessed in this way, say 1, 2, 3, then from here it's going to come in the reverse direction, like 3, 2, 1, then 2, 3. So it's just the tracks will be processed. The requests in the tracks will be processed only in this particular way. And there were like some like modifications to the same algorithm. So here, like one best real world example that we can think of is for like what we are trying to do here. Can someone relate? Pardon? Like one machine that we use like in our day-to-day lives uses a similar algorithm, like the scan algorithm. Just assume an elevator. So if when we are going up, okay, like let's say from floors, ground floor, first, second, when, let's assume someone here pressed the lift and it, while it is coming up, and someone here got in, and someone here wants to like immediately like presses in 3, if the elevator just sees 3 to be the nearest thing to access easily, and if it immediately moves to 3, then the person there at the 7th floor is going to suffer because there may be a lot of requests from 5, 4, 3, and 2, and the lift is just going to go, if it uses the shortest access time first, it just will be within those levels. But here, again, it's just doing a scan, in the sense it just scans in the whole way from the, if there is a request there, okay, it just scans in the whole way and then scans down the whole way. So similar thing is used here. And people also, were worried about, like, okay, if this is the order that we are accessing the thing, then the innermost track, like the track 2, gets accessed more frequently than the other tracks. If you think about 1 and 3, the innermost track is accessed more frequently because for in every scan, it is accessed immediately. So every other track is just 2, right? So they came up with some other thing called C-scan, like a circular scan. What it does is like it just scans the disk only in one particular direction. So the tracks that are accessed will be like 1, 2, and 3. Immediately there will be the disk head will go to track 1 again, back to track 1, and the scan only happens in this direction so that there is no partiality between the tracks. We just process the requests on all the tracks like in the same way. This is how this works. And one other alternative to the scan is called the F scan. Just the free F for freezing scan. Okay. So what it does is like it has two queues, Q1 and Q2. When requests start coming in to blocks, let's say block 2, block 3, block 17, 4 and 5, and if the queue is filled up, okay, then immediately this particular queue will be frozen. And these requests we will be taking care of these requests. And at that time, the new requests that are coming in will be placed in the other queue. 7, 2, 21, 43, 1, something like this. And once these requests are processed and when the other queue is full, now this queue will be, Q2 will be frozen, and the new requests will come and fall under Q1. And this is the way, these are the different ways or different alternatives for the scan algorithm, how it is implemented. And one other way is called the bounded. Okay, initially we saw the shortest seek time first, and then the next thing that we saw was the shortest access time first. Okay, shortest access time first, which takes into consideration both the seek and the rotation. And we are now just seeing what are the different ways that we can make this free from starvation. And one other way was the bounded shortest access time first. B for bounded. Here in this bound, it's just like we have like some limited number of requests that we should process before we go to the new requests. So in this bound, it's more like you can see here. With this bounded shortest access time first, so the bound here is 2, if you can see that. So the 2 requests, it just uses shortest access time first for 2 requests, and then only it moves on to the new requests that are coming in. So it needs to check among 2 and 3, which is the shortest access time first. It does that, and then it moves to this line that you can see here is that bound. So again, this is just like a window, okay? You access all the things within that window and then proceed to the other things, okay? So we are just going to look at something with the window size of 3. So here it is slightly different. If you can see here, there should be like three, like you can see the window size of three here. There are like three, in this case, it is more like there are like three requests from which it can pick from, basically. You can just run this. There are three requests from which it can pick from, and so the window, it just keeps on, when new things are added, just keeps adding that to that particular window. So I'll just run this one more time just to make sure. So here the window size is like from three requests it can pick from. So as you can see here, when it comes to 18, it does that, and then 10 does it. Now the window has 6, 12, and 8. At this time the window has like 12, 11, and 14, and finally it goes and accesses the thing in this window with 12. What if this window size is 1? What happens if the window size is 1? Exactly, it just becomes a first in, first out scheduler. So all it does is just, you can just speed it up. I'm just speeding this up. It just does this in a first-in, first-out way. So it just degenerates to a first-in, first-out scheduler. Pardon? I think, with that particular thing, I think that can happen. Actually, it can still starve. In this particular case, if we are considering, if we are moving the window, as we just saw in the size 3, if we are moving the window to the, like, the new requests that are coming in, we can still starve. But I think the assumption or the idea here would be, like, within those three requests, if those two requests that are coming in are always the shortest requests, better than the third thing that is on the window, it can stop in this particular case, That's a good point. In this particular case, when we were like extending the window, not keeping it as a fixed two-size window, when we saw a three-size window, when we are just adding two, like the new requests that are coming in, there is a possibility of starvation. It's still possible because the two new elements, if they are always the shortest things to access, then the first thing that was in the window will be starving. Okay. We have like little, like two or three more things here, but I think we can cover that in the next class. Okay, it's like 8:30 already. I think like 2 weeks back, I sent out a feedback form. Just got like nearly only 20 replies for that. If possible, just try giving your feedback. Again, it just asks basically things about the course, about the instructor. Try giving like true feedback, like whatever you feel, because we are planning to I'm planning to like discuss about this course with Ramsey and Mike Swift about how can we make some changes, because they wanted to make sure that since the students at UW are taking the same course, initially the idea was like the workload should be similar for whatever we have at UW, because we are giving the same 4 credits for you guys. But I think from, like at least from my experience, seeing you guys like work on projects and stuff, I think like there should be some changes definitely. So you may like, the thing is I may be using your feedback anonymously to actually show Ramsey and Mike Swift to see if we can update this course in the future. Okay. Thank you, guys.